Hi, I'm Chris Klink, and you're listening to my Writing Table Podcast. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Lee, I noticed a mention of 5 children on your website. How have you managed to write, blog, and I think I read that you also sometimes teach middle school English. Is that correct?
It is correct. I teach very part-time, like 1 or 2 classes a week, but it's a lot. I definitely try to keep my calendar free during the weekdays. There are things I don't do so that I can have time to write. My youngest went to kindergarten a few years ago, and that's really when she's 10 now. And that's really when I sat down and gave myself this time. I'd been a lawyer before, and I was always working from home, like 15 hours a week. And so I knew how to do it, but then I knew that this would take more time because in order to write for an hour, you have to sort of sit at your computer for 5. So I carve out the time Monday to Thursday. I leave my doctor's appointments and my anything that I try to just give. If there's a day when something crops up, that becomes the day when everything crops up. And I don't spread it out. And I don't, you know, have lunches or coffees during the week. I try to like make it like it's a job.
Right. Well, it is.
It is. Right. But before it was a job, when I was getting no money for it, when I was, you know, writing a book that no one had seen, I decided, well, I'm going to spend a year and I'm going to see if I can just do this Monday to Thursday, you know, 8:30 to 4 and see how it works.
When the kids were home during the lockdown, you had company at home during the week, right?
Yeah. There are some women who wrote tons. I think women with older children who just like were able to sleep and feed themselves and work, but it was a terrible time for me creatively. Yeah, they were home and I was making snacks and wiping up snacks and wiping the counter and sweeping the floors and loading the dishwasher and breaking up fights and finding people in the TV room and taking their iPads away. And I just was roaming the house, monitoring, sweeping, cleaning, folding. And then everyone got hungry again. And just, first of all, I didn't have the time. And I also didn't have the mental space. I need hours of time alone in order to write. I didn't realize that. Like, I really do.
I've heard that a lot. A lot of other authors have said that just this last year, I mean, myself included, if I wouldn't have had material to edit that had already been written, I don't think I would have been able to get anything done because new material was not coming.
No. I was editing this book during COVID, and the project that I started, I had to change. Like the new project that I'm working on now, I had to drastically change because it just didn't make any sense anymore.
So was it hard to jump back in?
Yes and no. It's very hard in the sense of it's easy to write while you're writing, you know, like when you're in the rhythm and you have scenes and ideas and the beginning is kind of easy, but then the middle is hard. And just, you know, that sort of giving yourself space. It's not hard in the sense that I was desperate to get back into it. Like it makes me so happy. You know, like I just feel anxious when I'm not writing. I think about all the things I'm not doing. I want to be doing it. It's like I run in the mornings and there's nothing that makes other runners crankier than seeing someone else running on a day you haven't run. And that's kind of how I felt. I'm like, why? And it's just because I enjoy the process too. Like I wanted to be back in it. So that wasn't hard. Like I was just so happy to lock a door.
You know, I've spoken to a lot of authors who are moms, but I think you might be the first one out of about 25 interviews who has 5 children.
Right.
You win the prize.
I win. I never win anything. It is a big endeavor. And it does, you know, there are times when it feels big and this has been one of them. Yeah.
Tell us about your publishing journey.
So I was a blogger and I got an email or a Facebook message from a woman who read my blog and said, you know, I don't know if you've ever thought about writing fiction, but a friend of mine is teaching a workshop. And I had just moved to New York and I was not going to take the bar and practice law here. I was going to think about what it was I wanted to do here. I was ready for like the next thing. So I put my youngest in kindergarten, or I think it was actually pre-K. And I went to the Sarah Lawrence Writing Center and took this class and wrote Trophy Life there. I sold it without an agent and then got an agent for the second book. So that's really how it happened.
Wow. So did you always know that you wanted to write?
I've always been writing. And the reason I started to blog when the kids were young was because I had stopped journaling. And I just didn't have the time and it didn't feel so relevant. And I just, you know, when you have babies and, you know, a good number of babies in a small number of years, I just couldn't like write about their first steps. And like, it wasn't that interesting. I don't have baby books. I mean, I have like albums and maybe with the first 1 or 2, I have a few things. And I felt badly that I wasn't documenting things. I mean, I just don't have like cuttings of hair and spoons. And I mean, I have some tubs with some things in them, but that's like very disorganized. And I was like, telling these stories about the kids. And, you know, my first two were boys. I don't know if you have boys, but two boys together, just under 2 years apart, they were wild. And I was that mom. Like, they would climb on everything. They would break everything. They just were like chameleons. And I would tell these stories and everyone's like, oh my God, I need to write this down. And so I was like, oh, maybe this is how I will document this journey. And that's kind of how it happened. It sort of became my baby book. You know, Trophy Life was written when my two sons were in middle school and I could hear the voices of sad middle school boys all the time and how much their parents hated them and their teachers hated them and how hard school was and how badly they felt about themselves. And I was like, you know, we don't hear about that so much, like what it's like to be a middle school. I mean, we do, like, obviously, like the whole Wimpy Kid franchise is capitalized on that. But other than that, like, you know, middle school girls are, they're more of a known entity now. They're so much more emotionally available. But there was something about that middle school boy that I just found so appealing. And I was in it.
Oh, yeah. I've listened to the audiobooks of both. And you were spot on as far as how authentic the children's voices were.
I teach middle school. I'm swimming in it. And when I wrote The Truth and Other Hidden Things, my oldest was, I think he was a junior. And, you know, his brother was a freshman and I had high school boys then and I had middle school girls. I could just hear their cadence. I could hear what they were talking about. And it's interesting to me. They're interesting to me.
The character in your first novel's life went from like this golden, you know, had everything to, I think at one point she's talking about wearing granny panties.
Right.
So where did you find your inspiration for her story?
Well, I wear those underwear. Right now. That wasn't that hard.
That wasn't a stretch.
Not a stretch. I like to be like swaddled in my underwear. Really. I like to like just be completely covered in it. It's like a swaddle. It's like a security feeling. Like when you tie up an infant and they calm down, I just put on a giant pair of underwear. I really love the idea of middle schoolers as being underestimated and sort of no one takes them seriously and no one thinks they can do anything. Everyone's like, oh, I hate teaching middle school. It's the worst. You know, like people really do sort of like trash it. And those of us who teach it love it. And we think that no one should underestimate a middle schooler because everything's happening then. Like all that like if you look at a child's life, all the brain development is happening either as a toddler or in middle school. Like that's it. And so we love that time. I mean, it's hard, but we love it. And so when I was thinking like, what would another like completely underestimated person be? Like who could I put in front of that classroom who also no one would take seriously? Nobody could think is up to the job. And just someone who's kind of fallen and the way she had, you know, this sort of like young poor girl who marries this rich older man who's going to take care of her and she believes him and then he goes. And, you know, I lived in Santa Monica when my first kids were born and there were these women from sort of more modest towns in California who were married to significantly older, wealthier men and they would have play dates at their houses. And they were like, there was like, someone had decorated these homes. There was like matching this. I mean, it was, we were all living in, you know, rentals and these women had lives and homes and a lot of stuff. And I often thought to myself, well, I wonder like how this ends up. And so I think that I had them in the back of my mind too.
Your second novel follows a family as they make their home in Pig Hill, New York, which I actually Googled that yesterday to see. I kept getting Peekskill and I'm like, no, that's not
that was anymore. It. So kill, I think, means like a lake or a pond in Dutch, which a lot of the names around here are. And there's a fish kill. And, you know, and I was like, well, that's obvious because fish live in a pond. But I thought pig kill just sounded funnier. Like if you're writing
a novel,
you're just looking for opportunities for funny names.
To me, I thought of all the places, if my husband came home and said, we're moving to this town, pig kill just sounds like you're moving to a slaughterhouse or something.
Well, there was something sort of Lord of the Flies about it, which is one of her kids' references. And because there is kind of like a grown-up, sort of like middle-aged Lord of the Flies feel to it. Like it's sort of that vibe. And so I thought that also.
When they get to pig kill, the kitchen isn't even connected to the rest of the house. So is there such a place that you've seen or is this something that you concocted yourself?
In California, my office was in the garage. It was like a renovated office. And I would often joke, thank God we live here because I can walk across the sunny yard, you know, and it's, wouldn't this be crazy if we lived somewhere else? I mean, that was already 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. I very much like the idea in this book, especially of the house as a character for many of us, but really for her, the kitchen is the heart of the house. And so mm-hmm. How would it feel if your heart was outside of your body?
Oh, like, wow.
How displaced would you feel? How uncomfortable would you feel? Right. And so that to me, just the beating heart of this house, put it outside. make her have to leave, make her feel uncomfortable. And so, A, I think you get some dramatic value, and then you get comic value too, because it is funny that she's trudging across this muddy, rainy lawn and snow bush to get a cup of coffee in the morning, and she's doing it pregnant, very pregnant. It just kind of came to me, but I think I was looking for something that would give me both.
Can you remind me the name of the guy that came with the house? What was his name?
Richard.
Richard, yes. I thought he was also a cool dimension of the house. He was like a de facto husband in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
The Walkers kind of inherit a lot of problems from the tenure issue all the way to the parties and things like that. When did you know you'd given her enough?
That's a great question.
And was there anything you took away when you were editing it?
Anything I took out that was too much for her? I don't think so. I don't think I took anything out. There might have been like another few scenes with the mothers, or like another few sort of heartbreak scenes with those mothers who reject her, and maybe that kind of thing. Given who she was, like for a lot of people, that wouldn't be too much, right? Like, okay, mm-hmm. So you didn't get tenure and you have to find another job. Like that happens. And okay, you have to throw a party. There are people who can do that. She cannot, right? She is socially anxious and not ready for this. And she's pregnant and she's just new to town. And so it wasn't hard to give her enough. Like she couldn't take a lot.
You must have pulled from your experience as a blogger. Did you ever want to tell stories like the stories that she was telling?
I mean, for sure, there were times where I got annoyed with some teacher or parent. And I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could write this expose? I mean, but obviously I never did. All fiction is a form of gossip, right? Like It kind of is. So we're doing it anyway, like for better or for worse. But no, I never got to do it on the blog.
Oh, and you are a prolific blogger. Are you still blogging as regularly as you used to?
My blog took a very big pause with the books, to be honest, and kind of infrequently posted. And then COVID was like the only place I had to put all that stuff. And it was great. It was the perfect format for like just an observation on the puzzle, you know, that everybody was doing, but that my kids wouldn't do. Or an observation on, you know, the dishwasher, or an observation on toilet paper and eggs, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to do it while I'm writing. Sometimes when I'm stuck, I'll blog and it will sort of like kind of loosen something for me.
Which of your characters most closely resembles your personality?
In this book?
Either.
I'm thinking. Well, I for sure feel like I am Beaks in the first book. Like that's where I sort of put myself. That sort of like opinionated friend who's overwhelmed and who accidentally washed a diaper in the morning, you know, and it's like pulling the gel out. Like I think I did that. Like that was where I put myself in that first book where you need to put yourself somewhere.
Yeah.
I just made her there. I don't know. You know, there's a lot about me that is like Belle's. I certainly feel like my attitude towards education and parenting are not dissimilar to hers. Like, I think that is very much from me. I think that she is quite like me. I think there's pieces of me in the mother and the mother-in-law. And I know that they're not always entirely sympathetic, but they were for sure the easiest for me to write.
And you did a great job of flipping things around. I love stories where you think you know a character and then about midway through, you start getting hints that maybe you don't.
No, totally. And they were so much fun for me to play with. And that mother-in-law, especially, like that's a familiar trope that you can really turn on its head.
That was a lot of fun. What scenes do you find are the most fun for you to write?
I mean, openings are generally just fun in general because it's fresh and exciting. You think, I've got this, and then you don't.
Then you revise it 20 more times.
Totally. I mean, in this book, I loved writing any scene with Vivian, the closet, the limo, Thanksgiving was fun for me. All of that was totally great. And the mother too, like they were fun scenes for me to write.
When I was listening to that book, that was when I was like, I have got to look her up and get her on the podcast. The closet scene was stellar. It was like over the top, but not like over the top in the way that is realistic, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like
you could imagine this happening. I mean, it's a crazy story. And then, but the emotions behind it were all very real, like what they spoke about and how she feels.
I mean, as women, I think it represents women. Like we all get that point where it's like, what's too much? Nothing. I need this. And it was just,
you need this TR.
What surprised you most about the writing life?
I thought that I just needed time alone. And I also need coffee shop. I also need like theater and movies and the kind of things that makes me think, but I need to be out and eavesdropping. You know, I need to be watching and looking and listening. Like everyone's like, oh, it must be so easy. You're home. And I was like, but I don't have anything to write about. I need to sit in a coffee shop and look at all the women and the men around me, listen to their conversations, look at people in line, look at what they're wearing, just be out in the world. And I think that that surprised me the most. I am an introvert. I do love working alone, but it's not enough.
You have to get out there.
Yeah.
Who gets to read your drafts first?
I have a couple of trusty readers. I have a friend in California who's just a great first reader. I mean, she just picks up things. She just has it. And I'm not the only person she reads for. So I'm very lucky.
Lucky you.
Another writer who used to be my teacher at Sarah Lawrence, Eileen Palmer, she sees everything that I write first. And then I have a couple of friends who, for different things, who are good at different pieces of it. And I go to for certain things. The last book, I had a friend of mine who was a doctor read it. And I was like, talk to me about pregnancy and middle age, you know, and, you know, a friend from the area read it. And I was like, does this make sense to you? Am I getting these locations right? You know, that so that you do sort of get specific, like, depending on what it is you're writing about.
How has that worked in your world, in your writing world?
I mean, tremendously. I mean, even now, just with us, like, you reached out to me, yeah, and we're writers and we want to talk about our book. I mean, I think that's the online community that exists now that didn't exist before. Like, you know, you meet someone after you've known them for a couple years and you've had like meaningful exchanges and you promote each other's books and sometimes you read each other's books. And so whether it's just through like the publishing company or just sort of like Bookstagram and women's fiction in general, it's been tremendous. I mean, there's always rough elbows here and there and, you know, we all experience them. But to be honest, the authors are all fine. Sometimes it's all the incidental stuff. We all know how much fun we have telling these stories and writing about women and putting ourselves in the books and not ourselves in the books. And we all just want to be writing good stories, right? And giving each other good stories. And so I think there's just a lot of room for that.
We make these friendships essentially in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And as much as our friends and husbands and, you know, whatever, spouses want to understand, we're all writers are in this vacuum together.
Totally. And we understand the experience too, in a way that they don't.
What do you define as good writing?
I like simple writing, actually. And doesn't necessarily mean short sentences, but I do like sparser writing that does more with fewer words. Personally speaking, and I try to do that. And I obviously don't always, I do enjoy that. And good writing has good pacing and doesn't make me wish the book were 30 pages shorter. It knows when to end and it can take you somewhere or it can take you not very far and make you look at something in a different way. I'm just seeing good company on your shelf. And I love that. I thought that was great writing. It's kind of like what the Supreme Court said about pornography. You know it when you see it. Hard to sort of define what good writing is, but when you're in it, you're like, wow, this is a great read. This is a great read.
Mm-hmm. I heard Lainey Cameron say, when you figure out as a writer what you're good at, double down on it. That was advice that she was given. Looking at your writing, what would you say is your strength, is the thing that you tend to double down on now after you've published two books?
I would hope that it's humor for sure. And not,
oh, definitely.
I mean, it won't all be as funny as this one. I mean, this one I think was particularly humorous, sort of like the humorous aspect of everyday situations, like the pieces of life that we take for granted, like the laughable moments in everyday life. I think also just very realistic fiction, just like what it is you're eating, what you're buying, how you feel in your clothes, how we feel in our bodies, like sort of very grounded. Like, I think that comes naturally to me. You know, physical humor, physical stories, I think I double down. Blogging for sure taught me, you know, I'd write these stories and a lot of them, you know, it wasn't so much about the kids, it was about my failings as a parent. You know, my inability to get a situation under control or to prepare for a situation. And I would write these stories basically to be funny. And people would say, wow, like you've said something that I have never said aloud, or we all feel that way. And so I do think that for me is very much a piece of it. In this book, it was this woman who really feels like, what am I doing with myself? Like, it isn't so much that I regret not having this career. I wouldn't have done things any differently, even though my mother wishes I would have. Like, this is the life I wanted. And now I want something else. How do I not feel so invisible all the time? And, you know, how much would I do to be seen and to be heard and to be taken serious? You're right. Like, that's the relatable piece. I think we all feel that way. And so many of us start writing at this time in our lives. Like, we haven't all been writing since we were 20. We really started when we had time or stories to tell. But also, I think when we felt like all we were doing was taking pictures that we weren't in, kind of like a character in the book. And suddenly these stories are our snapshots, kind of like the blog was my baby book. These are the family pictures that we're taking.
See, I couldn't write when my kids, I tried so hard, so many times to write when my kids were little, and I would start something and I'd stop. You know, back then you were doing it on a word processor.
I wrote Trophy Life on an iPad with a tiny little like this big.
That was a story that was dying to come out.
That fell out of me, that story. That literally was just like, and here it is. not that it was easy, but it was there to be told. But and my kids were already older. It was a very different, like small children and sleepless nights. And unless you have tremendous amounts of help, and frankly, even when you do, it's hard.
What are you working on now?
I am working on a story about a mom in Seattle, which is where I lived before I lived in New York, who used to be a child actress.
Oh, how fun.
She left the biz at like 16, 17, but she has to go back to LA to film the reboot over the one summer and reconnect with those friendships that she had in LA at that time in the 80s and 90s and be a working actress again after she's been out of the business for so long.
What are you reading now?
I'm reading Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. I just got that. I actually just read Good Company, as I mentioned, on your bookshelf. I read Andrew McCarthy's memoir, Brat.
Oh, I have that on my coffee table.
He's adorable. That's all I have to say about that.
Yes. Speaking of him, have you read Bethany Crandall's The Jake Ryan Complex?
No. What is that?
It's funny. It is funny, funny. And it is about a woman
right now
who is an OB-GYN. It kind of reminded me of some of the personalities in your book. She's not married and her friends tell her the reason she's not married is because she has a Jake Ryan complex because it's, you know, we all want to be saved by Jake Ryan at the end of the movie.
By the way, I was not waiting to be saved by Jake Ryan.
Well, I wasn't.
He wasn't.
I liked Andrew McCarthy though, actually, in the other movie.
So did I.
Quiet guy.
I actually just read in his book that he was not originally chosen for Pretty in Pink, but Molly Ringwald, who basically the movie was written for her. John Hughes let her basically cast the movie. She was in high school. She was in high school. I mean, and she had so much agency. And in general, those stories, I think they meant so much to us because it was kids our age telling stories in a new way. But she tested with Andrew McCarthy and she said, no, that's the kind of boy she would fall in love with. And I think so many of us who were bookish and who write were more sensitive at that age and kind of felt like we were on the outside. He's the one that Jake Ryan, I mean, he's turning him away, but yes.
Yeah, check that one out. It is really good. What is the best writing advice you've received?
I mean, obviously show, don't tell. I think that helps a lot, especially, I mean, it just does. There are many times I'm like, there are things you have to tell. And there are, especially for like more humorous writing, like anything that you can show in a funnier scene, in a physical moment is going to make more of an impact. That conversation in the closet would not have made sense just having coffee or just reflecting on it. But if she's in there dressed in those clothes, wearing those shoes, and she's heavily pregnant and that she's like tripping. And I loved writing that book. It was just, I mean, I hope you can tell, like it was a fun time. It was a fun experience. She was it was kind of rollicking. It was tough, but it was enjoyable.
Well, is there anything you'd like to share with new writers to give them a little leg up?
I do think you have to treat it like it's a job, even when it's not a job. In other words, I do meet a lot of people and they say, well, I just don't have the time. And everybody, I mean, it's just about what you make the time for. And I don't have a lot of time.
With five children, no.
But you do sort of make choices. And I think if you want to take yourself seriously, this whole writing every day thing, the minute you get off track, you feel bad about yourself. And writing on weekends for a lot of us parents is just, it's like a non-starter. Like, it's just not. Like, maybe in the evening, but you know how that is. But I do think it's giving yourself the time, whether it's a part-time job that you say, I'm going to write, you know, 5 hours this week or 10 hours, whatever. But if you treat it that way, you'll make the time for it. I mean, that's my big advice. You just have to sit down and do it.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. This was so much fun.
It was fun to talk to you anytime. Have me back.
To learn more about Lee Geller, visit our website at leegeller.com. Music by Pavel Yudin and photography by Casey Meineke. Sound editing by podcast engineers. If you like what you're hearing, hit the subscribe button and consider leaving a review.